And I usually teach this course in 8 hours, but I only have 30 minutes. So I'm mostly here to inspire you rather than actually teach you everything. So first off, I want to show you quickly how data is stored inside of SQL Server. Every data file in SQL Server is basically one big array of these 8 kilobyte data pages known as a page. And each page consists of a header, it's got a body, and it's got a record offset array. And everything inside of SQL Server is stored in this format on these 8 kilobyte chunks of data. The record offset array is also known as the slot array. And this is a small array of pointers at the end of each page. And this pointer array contains pointers to the individual records inside of a data page that contains the data. So if we want to find the first record, we just follow the first pointer. If we want to find the second record, we follow the second pointer, and so forth. And you need to read this record offset array because the records are stored in physical order. But to get the logical order, we need to follow the pointers. And each of these records that we have on the page, each of those is stored in what's known as the fixed var format. And the fixed var format has 3 parts. It's got the fixed length part, the variable length part, and it's got the null bitmap. And if we just move through this format, first off, we've got the first status byte. And the first status byte contains 7 bits of data. The version bit, the first one, is always 0, at least in SQL Server 2008 and onwards. Then we've got 3 bits that designate the type of record. Is this index data? Is this actual data? Is this some kind of blob data? We've got a bit that says if there is a null bitmap, because if you don't have any nullable columns, there's no reason to have a null bitmap. And if you don't have any variable length columns, we don't need the variable length part of the record. And so this bit will be 0, meaning that we don't have the variable length section. And if you're using some kind of versioning, snapshot isolation, in that case, each record might have a small 14-byte extra structure on it known as versioning information. And if it has this 14-byte structure, this bit will be set. And finally, the last bit is not used in no versions of SQL Server. And that is kind of weird because the second status byte, only 1 bit is used. So in the first byte, we have 1 bit to spare. And in the second byte, only 1 bit is used. So we're basically wasting a byte for each record. Probably the reason for this is that if they ever wanted to extend the functionality and they needed to add a bit, then they would have to grow each of your records with a byte, and you would have a fragmented database. So they just reserve a lot of space inside each record. Now, after the first status bytes, we have the fixed length data. And the fixed length data contains a 2-byte pointer that just points to the end of the fixed length data. And so we know that the first 2 bytes are the status bytes. We know we've got 2 bytes for the pointer. And so by just reading the end, we know that this is where the bytes are stored for all of our fixed length columns. After that, we have the null bitmap. And again, we have 2 bytes that keep track of how many columns are tracked by this null bitmap. And for every 8 columns, you need 1 byte. So if you have 1 column, the null bitmap will contain 1 byte. If you have 8 columns, it'll also contain 1 byte. But as soon as you go to 9 columns, it'll be 2 bytes, and so forth. And finally, we have the variable length offset array. And what this contains is 2 bytes. In this example, the 2 bytes contains the value 2, meaning that we've got 2 variable length columns. And then we have 2 pointers. Now, the first one, in this case, points to the end of the first variable length column. And the second one over here points to the end of the second column. And so by reading these, we know that this is the data for the first column, and this is the data for the second column. And if we know the data type that's stored here, we can now take those bytes and transform them into the actual value. And just to show you a quick example, in this case, I've made a table, varchar test. It's got a single varchar column. I add the value mark inside of it. And what we get is a record like this. So we've got the 2 status bytes. we've got the fixed length data, which actually points to itself because there is no fixed length data. We've got the null bitmap, we're tracking a single column, it's not null. We've got a single variable length column, and we've got the pointer that points to the end of the record, meaning that these are the four bytes that contain the value mark. And actually, this is all you need to know about records. There is nothing more to it. It's very simple. So once you know how to find your variable length bytes, and you know where the fixed length bytes are stored, now you can start actually parsing your data types. And there are two kinds of data types. You have the fixed length data types that are stored in the fixed length part, and you have the variable length data types that are stored in the variable length part. And I'm not going to go through how to parse all of these, because most of them are actually pretty well documented. One mention, though, is that if you have variable length columns, sometimes you need to store more data that can be stored in a single page. And if you're storing more data than you can have in a single page, rather than just storing the data inside of the record, you will then store a pointer inside of that record that points to one or more data pages that contains records with the actual data. And if at some point that pointer grows more than what be stored on a single page, you will then store a pointer that points to another record which contains an array of pointers that then points to the data. And you may get an extra level, so you have a pointer that points to an array of pointers that points to another array of pointers that then points to data. And at that point, you can store pretty much 8 gigabytes of data, which is beyond what you can store in any kind of column, so that's plenty. So you'll never see more than 2 levels of these pointers. But what this also means is that when you parse a single record, you may need to parse a related page to get your actual data. And to do that, we need to parse the header of the page. And the header of the page is completely undocumented. You cannot find any information on it outside of Microsoft. And so a couple of years ago, I tweeted asking, does anyone know what the format is? And Kimberly Tripp said that, well, it's not documented, but if you have enough patience, you could go through DBCC page, which basically just dumps the raw bytes of a page and just try to figure it out. And so that's what I did. So I just want to show a quick demo of how you can reverse engineer the page header format. I'm connecting to SQL Server 2008, but this is the same in 2005, 2014, SQL Azure, completely same format. I'm just going to create an empty database. I'm going to create just a dummy table. It doesn't matter what it is. Insert a couple of rows. Then I'm going to use the dbcc ind command, which just lists all of the pages that belongs to this table. And we'll see that one of the data pages is page 78. And if we call dbcc page on page 78, we can get the raw bytes that are stored inside of this page. And what we now get is the actual header. So this up here are all of the parsed values of the header that SQL Server gives us. And just below it, we have the raw bytes that are contained inside of the header. And so we have to figure out where are these values stored inside of the bytes. And we can try and look at these. So we've got the value 8057 that looks kind of unique. And I can reveal that in hex, that is actually 79.1F. So by just finding unique value, we can find where inside of those bytes it's stored. And we can look further. We've got the value 129. And I'm not sure what that is in hex, but let's just say that's 8100. So now we found 2 values. We can continue. We've got the value 3. And the value 3 is stored here, but it's also stored there. And so we don't really know which one of those is actually the value we're looking for. And even worse, we've got a lot of values that are 0, and we have no idea where they're stored. So we need to figure that out somehow. And so what I did is to just copy the path, the physical path of the data file, and then shut down SQL Server. And once SQL Server is shut down, we can open up a hex editor, any kind, and open that data file, and we get raw bytes inside of it. And we just saw that this was page 78. And since each page is 8 kilobytes long, if we multiply 8 kilobytes by 78, we get the offset inside the data file where these bytes are stored. And in our hex editor, we can jump to that offset. And so what we've got right here are those header bytes that we just saw inside of SQL Server, this time in our hex editor. And one of the problems is that we had a lot of zero values. So what if we just overwrote some of those, just with some garbage data? You do not want to do this on any of your databases. And do not do this in production. This will corrupt your database. But it's fun to do. So I'm just going to save it. And I'm going to open services so we can restart SQL Server, find the right one, start it. And so if you go back to SQL Server, I'm just going to reconnect. Let's just try and do a select star from our table and see what happens. We get a consistency error because we've just corrupted our database. We can't read it anymore. But the thing is, DBCC page is a bit more lenient. It will actually try to pass the header, even though the table is corrupt. And it'll try to pass the values that we just messed up. So if we look at this, all of a sudden, we've got a new value in the slot count. So SQL Server right now thinks that we're storing 35,000 rows in 8 kilobytes, meaning that each row is like 2 bits. Obviously, it doesn't make sense, but it passes the page for us. And so 34,935, let's try and convert that into hex. 34,000, what was the value? 935. So that has the hex value of 7788, and that is what we're storing right here. And we've also got the value 26,197. 26,197. That is the hex value 5566, storing it right there. And so if you continue doing this, corrupting just one bit by bit by bit, you're slowly going to map out where each of these values are stored inside of the header. And what you will end up with eventually is a C# class, in my case, that simply maps each of these different fields into the individual byte locations inside of the header. And so by having this complete map of the header, you can now parse it pretty easily, because these are just integers, longs, shorts, and so forth. And once we have the header, we're pretty well on the way to parsing this database. So just going to restart this one. So now that we more or less know how to parse a record, we know how to parse a header, we need to look at how these pages are organized inside of SQL Server. And there are two ways that SQL Server stores physical data, either in an index or in a heap. In an index, the physical order is guaranteed, so it'll be sorted alphabetically or numerically, whereas in a heap, it's just stored in allocation order. And since I don't have more time, we're only going to look at indexes in this case. Indexes are stored in what's known as a balanced tree, a B+ tree. And a B+ tree looks like this. And what we have is a root page that contains pointers to each of the child pages. But we don't really need the whole tree, because all we're interested in is the leaf level, because this is where the actual data is stored, and that's what we want to parse. So imagine we have a reference to the root page, and we just follow the left leg again and again, all the way until we reach that first leaf level page. As soon as we have that first leaf level page, we can use the fact that these are stored in a doubly linked list. So if we just find the first leaf page, we can just read this whole list of pages one by one by one and slowly pass them. So we need that root page to get to this point. And to get to the root page, we need to find its allocation data. And the way SQL Server stores it is that it's got an object, either an index or a heap, and each object has one or more partitions. So even in standard edition, express edition, you've still got a partition, just one. And each partition has one or more allocation units. And the allocation unit that we're interested in is known as the hobbit, the heap or B tree, either for the heap or for the index. The two other allocation units, the slob and the lob, which are large objects and small large objects, it doesn't make sense, but we're not really interested in those right now because we need the raw data, the hobbit. And so to find this hobbit allocation unit, which contains a link to the root page, we need two things. We need the schema, because once we find the root page, we need to know how to pass those records, needing the schema, and we need the root page link. Unfortunately, SQL Server is very powerful. It's got a lot of dynamic management views that allows us to select all of this metadata. If we take a look at it, just connecting again, creating an empty database, just creating a dummy table called cluster test. And now if we select from sys.columns and join on sys.tables for our given table, we can find the schema of our table. So if I run this, we see that there are two columns, A and B. So this is the schema. And if we select from sys.tables, we can get an object ID of the table that we're interested in. And using that object ID, we can select from sys.partitions to get the partition ID of the table that we're interested in. And using that partition ID, we can select from system internals allocation units to get the allocation unit for this partition. And what we get is the in-row data allocation unit, which is a synonym for the hobbit allocation unit. And more interestingly, it's got a pointer to that first page. So at this point, we now have the schema, and we have a pointer to the root page. And by just following this, we can now pass all of the data. And so the overall structure is find the object ID, find the partitions, and then find the hobbit allocation unit. There is a problem, though, and that is that DMVs cannot be used for this, because DMVs are not stored on disk. They are created on the fly by SQL Server. And if we've shut down SQL Server, we don't have any DMVs. So we need to find some data beneath the DMVs. Unfortunately, we can do that. So just create an empty database. And if we run SP help text on the sys.tables view that we just used, we can see the source behind that DMV. And I don't really care about the source itself. All I'm interested in is that sys.tables is basically just a big select statement from the sys.objects dollar table. So sys.objects dollar is interesting. Let's try and select from it. But if we try to select from it, it doesn't exist. And this is because now we're touching on some of the internal stuff in SQL Server that they don't really want you to look at. So to do that, we need to change our connection to the dedicated administrator connection. And the way you do that is just to take your connection string and type admin colon, and then just connect. It might give you an error, but it connects nonetheless. And now you can select from sys.objects dollar. So this is the raw data that lies beneath sys.tables. Let's try just for the fun of it and look up sys.objects dollar in sys.objects dollar, because it should exist there. It doesn't. It doesn't exist. So sys.objects dollar is a view inside of a view. And if you run SP help text on it, it fails, but you can run select object definition on sys.objects dollar, and you get the source behind it. And if you go somewhere to the right, you will see that sys.objects dollar selects its data from another table known as sys schema objects. So sys.tables gets its data from sys.objects dollar, and sys.objects dollar gets its data from sys schema objects. So let's try and look up sys schema objects in sys.objects dollar, and we find it. But let's go one step further and actually try to select sys.schema.objects from sys.schema.objects. And once we do that, we have now reached the lowest level inside of SQL Server where the actual base table data is stored. And this does not look like sys.tables because all of those columns you're used to, those are now stored in a status field, an NSID field, an int prop, p class field. And I have no idea what those values mean. So this is internal stuff. You need to reverse engineer each of these fields to figure out how they store those actual values. And if you need the schema, you can just run SP help, and it's going to tell you the schema of that base table. So if somehow we could get a pointer to the first page inside of the schema objects, and we have the schema, we could parse that one without SQL Server. So the base tables, they're the basis for all the DMV data that you see. Those are stored on disk, DMVs are not. You can only query them through the dedicated administrator connection. And you will see some confusing columns that don't really make sense. They just contain some integer values, they're bit fields. You have to figure out which bits means what. And you'll also see that they use a lot of internal functions. I've got an example of that in just a moment. So to go back to our overview, to get the actual table, we'll have to look up in SysSchema objects. To find our partitions, we'll have to look at the base table known as SysRowSets. And to find the allocation units, we'll have to look at the base table known as SysAllocUnits. And to find the schema, we'll have to look at SysCollPaths. So these are each base tables that corresponds to the DMVs that you're used to. And let's try and do it. So you can only have one dedicated administrator connection at a time, so you just need to close the other ones, reconnect this one. There we go. So first, I'm going to try to select SysSchema objects from SysSchema objects. That is going to give me the object ID 34. And using that object ID 34, I can get its schema through SysCollPaths. So this is the same output that SP help gave me just before. And once I have the object ID, I can select from SysRowSets and get the partition ID. And if I just looked at ID minor, which is synonymous with the index ID, so for the clustered index, if I look up the allocation units for the clustered index, I've now got a pointer to the root page of SysSchema objects. And since I know the schema, we can parse this. And this is the beginning of parsing a data file without SQL Server. But this all assumed that we already had SysSchema objects. So we need to start from ground zero. And where do we do that? We can call DBCC page on the boot page, which has a fixed location in all versions of SQL Server, page ID 9. If we call DBCC page on that one, and we just enable trace on, let me just recreate this one. So if we look at DBCC page, scroll down. It contains a single record with a fixed format. One of the things it contains is a pointer to the first sysindexes field, which is the root page of sysallocUnits. So we've got a pointer to the sysallocUnits table, and we can figure that one schema out so we can pass sysallocUnits. And once we have sysallocUnits, this data, we can then use a fixed object ID for the sysRowSets table, which is again constant across versions. Using that, we can get sysRowSets, which is our partitions. And if we use a fixed object ID of 34, which is the object ID of SysSchema objects, we will then be able to look up the allocation unit for it, and thereby parsing SysSchema objects. And once we have SysSchema objects, we can look up SysCollPaths, so the schema table inside of SysSchema objects. We can look up its partition, its allocation unit, and finally, we'll be able to parse SysCollPaths, which allows us to get the schema for any other table that we want to parse. So one of the things you're going to run into is that when you're looking at the source for these views, you will see internal functions like OpenRowSet table RSC prop, which does something to the TI field. And I'm not sure what it does, but the X type, length, precision, scale, all of those somehow come from this integer field known as the TI value. So we need to figure out where does it come from. If you Google this, you won't find anything. You'll find a blog post by me, but that's all you'll find. So what I did to figure it out was to create a table, TI test, and just create a series of different columns. So we've got date times, we've got binary, varchar, every different kind of column, just to see the different TI values that were there. And then I took and selected the raw type name from sys.types. I took the raw TI value from sys.rs.cols. And finally, I also took all of the past values from the system internal partition columns DMV. So this gave me the raw value, and it gave me the past values. And so if I try to match those, I might be able to figure out what it looks like. So we've got the data types, we've got the TI value, and we've got the past values. And if we look at those, in this case for the binary, we've got a TI value of 12973. And if we convert that to hex, in this case, it's 32AD. And if we look at the value 173, that corresponds to 0xAD. So we can figure out that that last byte contains the value for the system type ID. And the value 32 corresponds to the value 50, which is the max in-row length. So by just looking at the raw TI value, we can map these to the actual past values that SQL Server uses. And each different data type differs in the way it uses the TI field. So for each different type, you will have to reverse engineer the format and try to figure out what it looks like. And if you continue doing that, you might end up like me and create a SysTI parser that has about 300 unit tests that is able to pass this field. And so slowly, you just got to figure out how to pass all of these values, and you can recreate those DMVs that SQL Server does and actually provide those to yourself without SQL Server. And so what I wanted to show with this session is that SQL Server isn't magic. You can actually force SQL Server to give its data to you, and you can figure out how it passes stuff from disk. A lot of stuff is documented in books, but those books stop at some point, and you will have to use some of these techniques to actually parse it. But if you want to go explore this, you should look at my project called OrcaMDF, because everything I just showed you is based on an open source project I made, a complete parser for SQL Server data files written in C#, completely open source. So all of the stuff that I use to parse this stuff, it's available to you. If you go and look at the source, you can try it out, and you can test it on your own databases. And there's lots of stuff that this can be used for. I've used it just for learning, look at the structures, see what they mean. You can use it to really gain a deep down understanding of performance characteristics. Because if you're wondering why an index isn't performing, if you know how it's stored, you can also figure out how to optimize it. You can also use this to deploy a read-only SQL Server database on a Windows phone that doesn't have SQL Server, and you can read the database from inside of your project. You could use this for corruption recovery, because if you can't pass all of the database, if some of it is corrupt, you can manually go past some of the parts that are not corrupt, and you can actually recover data. And I've got some code samples for that as well. And if you go to my blog in this category, I've got a whole series of this, including posts to show how to actually recover corrupted data. And these slides will be available. I'll tweet them in just a bit, so you can be able to download them, including the links. So if you have any questions, I believe we've got just a couple of minutes for it. Otherwise, I will be available in the area. Any questions? Thank you. All right. Well, this was a quick intro. If you have questions, do come up afterwards. Do check out the code. And usually, I give this in 8 hours, so don't be afraid if you didn't get all of it. I do not expect you to. Thank you.